Hello, and welcome to the Nattercast for Game of Thrones, episode 403, entitled Breaker of Chains. I am Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, and I'm here tonight with my small council. Say hello, small council.
Hi,
hello.
Small council.
Hello.
And we're here to natter at you about the third episode of the fourth season of Game of Thrones, called Breaker of Chains. Before we get into it, I'll just give our contact information real quick. You can reach us at www.nattercast.com, and you can send us email if you like at nattercast@gmail.com. But where the real action for us is on Facebook. If you go to Facebook and you search for Nattercast, you'll find a page and a group. We'd really love it if you'd like the page and join the group and come and join us for conversations that are not just about Game of Thrones, but about all different kinds of TV. We got people watching Orphan Black. We're rewatching Deadwood. We're doing we do The Walking Dead and all that kinds of things in conversation on Facebook. But tonight we're talking about Game of Thrones. And so let's just get right into it. There's a lot of controversy this week about some of the scenes in King's Landing. And so I think we're just going to jump straight into the recap with Alan and get to our moment so we can discuss the meat of the topic.
Yeah, so we'll start off in the Sept of Baelor in the scene sort of preceding it. I think we've got a little audio clip here as Tywin lectures.
Yes, so this is Tywin's lecture of Tommen.
Strength. King Robert was strong. He won the rebellion and crushed the Targaryen dynasty. And he attended three small council meetings in 17 years. He spent his time whoring and hunting and drinking until the last two killed him. So, we have a man who starves himself to death, a man who lets his own brother murder him, and a man who thinks that winning and ruling are the same thing. What do they all lack?
Wisdom.
Yes.
Wisdom is what makes a good king.
Yes. But what is wisdom? A house with great wealth and fertile lands asks you for your protection against another house with a strong navy that could one day oppose you. How do you know which choice is wise and which isn't? You any experience of treasuries and granaries or shipyards and soldiers?
No,
of course not. A wise king knows what he knows and what he doesn't. You're young. A wise young king listens to his counselors and heeds their advice until he comes of age. And the wisest kings continue to listen to them long afterwards. Your brother was not a wise king. Your brother was not a good king. If he had been, perhaps he'd still be alive. Now, as the king, you will have to marry. Do you understand why?
The king needs a queen.
Yes, but why? To further the family line. Do you know how that happens?
Yes.
Yes, but has anyone explained the detail to you?
I don't think so.
It's all relatively straightforward.
It's much as I'd love to sit here and muse about what the birds and the bees conversation from Tywin Lannister would involve. My big question for the group, it would either be just way too matter of fact or just utterly phenomenal with that accent. Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Yeah. Dynasty.
Dynasty, yes.
Legacy of your dynasty.
But, it brings to mind the Tywin Charles Dance reading the 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah.
Video, if you've seen. Kinky fuckery. Anyway, if you haven't looked that up, you really have to. But I think the big question out of this one, really, that I want to throw to the group is how much of a bastard is Tywin here? So you've got, he must be the world's worst father. Because you've got Cersei, who has already sent away Myrcella, who at the age of 14, and I think when people watch it, they're like, oh, they sent her away to Dorne, to the south, except for. She's going to be a hostage, and then she's going to be married off. Right. And it's not like they have, intercontinental flights here. So she may not see Myrcella until she's, 30 with kids.
Right.
Right. Joffrey's dead, literally sitting right there. And in comes Tywin, and he's basically like, listen, don't listen to your mom. Listen to someone smart like me. your brother was an idiot.
Yeah.
That's why he's dead. It's his fault. And by the way, let me go tell you how things work out here. And like, someone was mentioning that someone referred to it as literally kidnapping, you know, or figuratively kidnapping.
It was Alex Graves.
Alex Graves, the director.
Yeah, like kidnapping, yeah.
He's kidnapping right in front of him. So you get Cersei just basically has lost her entire set of kids.
Yeah, what you don't catch right in just listening to the audio is that half of that scene is on Cersei.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she's just wilting.
Right.
Yes.
You know.
And with Joffrey right there in the shot.
Yeah.
Well, I think this also comes back to, I mean, when Joffrey was doing all of that ridiculous stuff at the wedding, she was the only one laughing. You know, she was the only one enjoying it with him, and it just emphasized how much she associated with him and didn't associate with Tywin's ideals of what it meant to be regal, to
right.
rule the, you know, to be a ruling family, to do anything like that.
Well, it's like she told Peter Baelish, you know, power is power. That's it
right.
for her.
She's, right.
As soon as you get the power, that's it. You just exercise it for your own pleasure.
Right.
And Tywin is very much not a power is power kind of guy. He's
exactly.
like, power is a means to an end, and you got to do all the...
Yeah.
He's a total, like, gamer. You know,
yeah.
He's got to balance all his resources. And,
well,
he's the
big strategist. I mean,
right.
he's the one that's got the map in his head going, if I do this and I do that, then I can get those.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, he's not exactly delivering hugs.
No.
No big hug mug.
No. And I think...
I mean, there was literally not even like, how you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, I'm here to take your son, other son away from you.
Yes.
Like, I'm not even going to acknowledge
that. Well,
he's
completely clear that she's a broodmare.
Joffrey
yeah.
is dead on the table.
Yeah, he's also exactly what Sion said. Made it very clear that, you know, he's extremely disappointed in all of his children and that they have not lived up to what he thought he was teaching them. And the best she can do is further the family line and pump out more babies.
Yeah,
that seems
yeah
like
I don't see that working out for her so well in any way, shape, or form.
No. I mean, I could see Loras could probably, like, just, you know, think of England and get it and father some children with an incredibly compassionate and willing and preferably relatively masculine-looking partner. I don't think with Cersei he's got a shot.
Cersei's basically the
no.
exact opposite.
Well, no,
of
if he was
means.
Blindfolded, I have a whole position in mind. If he was blindfolded and he was getting it from behind, his dick would be erect, and they could probably get some semen into some vulva that way.
Yeah. I mean,
it would take help.
That's complicated.
They did it throughout
though.
This, and there were a lot of gay games.
And we thought we were going to have to rush into the next scene. There's value in this video. There's value here.
Yeah, Marjorie was up for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Marjorie was.
Yeah,
she was. She had a plan for all kinds of.
Yeah,
yeah, Marjorie could
King
figure
semen
it out.
In her vulvus area.
Yes,
yeah.
King
yeah.
semen.
Yeah,
so it's all she cares about is King semen.
Oh, look, the pie.
That's right up there with McDo.
So
this contextualizes the scene, the big scene for the week.
Was there conversation about this scene?
Mm-hmm.
The next one?
The next scene is... So
oh, people are talking about it.
Oh, there's a little bit of chatter, yeah.
There's
a little bit of notice online. good dead face right there for a second. I'm like, what the fuck? I've lost my co-pilot.
He's gone insane.
He's gone insane.
My wingman's down.
I think Sean G. Cohen has called it the outrage industrial complex of the internet.
Oh, there's a... Shane is ringing in again.
Oh no, we can't lose Shane.
Shane is playing Dingle 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 games.
Hey Shane, can you hear
it? Sounds like the 70s phone. It's great.
Oh, so do you have anything else? Do we have anything else on the Tywin colloquium, or do we want to roll into the big question?
Oh, are you looking at me now?
Yeah, yeah,
I'm good. Right. I'm good. It's
I do want to say one thing about Charles Dance.
Yeah.
The guy is right now, he's one of the stars of the show for me. I mean, he's stealing every scene he's in.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely killing it.
Yep.
I would watch the Charles Dance and Lady Olenna show,
uh-huh.
especially if it was on right after the Tyrion and Bronn show. Like,
yeah.
If that was the Wednesday night lineup, you know, that's a must-see TV. Right?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's obviously probably other actors that could have pulled it off, but there are so many roles in this show that have been, they're just kind of made by who's
right.
in them.
Yeah.
And this is one of those.
Well, he also brings up everybody who he's in a scene with.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's, I mean, because it really doesn't matter who you put him against. Cersei, Tyrion, some scrub like Tommen, you know.
Joffrey.
Yeah, exactly. And he's raising the bar for everyone in the room. And to me, that's the sign of a really spectacular character. So.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing a good job.
Good stuff.
Okay, well, we have some audio for the next little bit of this scene. And we'll just run it, I guess. And of course, I have a little too much lead. I've got to learn how to do this better.
Here it's okay. It's building.
Well, while people are waiting, yes, we are going to discuss rape.
Why have the gods made me love a hateful woman?
This just then.
Jaime, no, babe, please. Please. Stop it. Stop it.
No.
Stop it.
He does not care.
He does not care. So we got a fuck ton of feedback on this segment.
I believe it was only a metric fuck ton.
Like the rest of the internet.
So we kind of thought we would just sort of read people's feedback and have a little conversation around there.
That's right. We're outsourcing the intellect here.
Yeah. That's right. No, we totally do.
Like the irony of the dog in my hands?
Yeah, she's got Tyrion in her hands right now.
Okay. Rad Zipper Rich. I looked at it like Jaime has lost everything. Not only has his hand gone, but nobody in the family respects him but for Tyrion. His father mocks him with the sword. His son mocks him for not having any major accomplishments. Cersei tells him he's been away too long, when in reality it's because he isn't whole anymore. If I remember correctly, the rape started when she recoiled from his golden hand. That then resulted in Jaime passing all of this built-up pain that he has suffered on her behalf back to her, which will end any relationship they will have.
Interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think he's got a good point on
why he
Jaime's state of mind.
Yes.
And about and so the controversy here is, you know, there are a lot of people who feel like this scene is recontextualized from the book, that the book was not a rape scene. And that this is. Other people feel this wasn't a rape scene. But it's clearly not. It's much more non-consensual and Jaime taking than in the book text. And I think that is a basis for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, when I first watched it, a little light went off in my head that, like, oh, there's going to be an epic shitstorm on the internets. But, I mean, that doesn't take much these days. But, yeah, I was actually interested in it for that point. I was interested in it for the characters. And I think it's pretty tough to judge a lot of the questions rolling around until you see the reaction to it. You know, they probably would have been better off by positioning the scene in a place of higher importance in the episode. I think just merely by putting it last, you might have changed a lot of the discussion or having the reaction. I'm pretty sure we're getting to a point where, and it's, you know, I don't know if the writers are screwed up or if the director screwed up or anything like that, but if you take Jamie's arc, by this point in the books, he's on this sort of redemption ride, and I think that's pissed off a lot of people that they've changed it. But now, if you just look at it on a book basis, what you have is someone that's actually hitting rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts out, all you get of Jaime is that he's a horrible, cocky bastard who throws a child out the window.
Right.
And then he's a horrible, cocky bastard who actually kills a cousin to escape and doesn't really care about anything. And then he starts to interact with Brienne, and you start to like him better. And he does some decent things and all that. But he's always trying to, you know, he likes Brienne, so he does something nice for her. And then he's always trying to run back to King's Landing to get to Cersei. And he's always been trying to do this. And in that way, you know, he does a couple of nice things, but he's still cocky, selfish Jaime. And he loses the hand. And he gets rejected by his dad and his lover. And then his lover tells him he needs to kill the only other person who's even been nice to him.
Right.
And Tyrion. That's what she wants out of him. And, like, this is rock bottom, and he reacts very, very poorly. It does not excuse his actions here. But from a story development, it's different than the book in the sense on where he is in the path, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I find myself fascinated by it. And for Cersei, this is obviously horrific, too.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, they've got a real challenge in the adaptation, right? Because, you know, a lot of characters simply don't exist, you know, for later books and even parts of the text that they're in right now. And they've got contracts with these actors to you know, have starring roles. I mean, that's why we saw so much Theon last season.
Right.
Right? Yeah. That was all contractual.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've got to do something to give, you know, Jaime meaning and purpose. But, you know, Mo Ryan's article said it best, I thought, about defining how we will ultimately treat this scene is how they treat it after.
Right.
You know, and if they sweep it under the rug going forward, then it's, you know, sensationalism.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know,
exploitation.
Right. And it, but if they actually do it, you know, have Cersei cope with it and Jaime cope with it and have the actual consequence to these actions and have that explored, then it will be worth it in some way, shape, or form. But it's hard to see in isolation.
Right. Yeah,
because, especially in this episode, because nothing else happens about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we have a little more feedback. Let's see what else.
We have a lot more feedback.
We have a lot
more feedback. This one's a little more controversial. Nikki Ebright. I think part of what is making the Cersei-Jaime sex scene so controversial is that it's very gray. If they were strangers and he'd had sex without getting her consent, that's rape. But they've been lovers for decades. There's an implied consent.
No. No. Sorry, don't agree.
Let's get the other one that's her.
There's more from her.
Okay.
However, in her mind, from what appears on screen, things have changed. Does that mean there's no longer consent? They haven't discussed it, not in specifics. So really then comes down to her. He could see her nose as part of their previous games. She would say no, and then yes other times. But has the situation changed for her that no is really no? I'm not advocating rape for what Jaime did. I'm just trying to point out what our courts have to deal with when trying to define what is and isn't rape. It is very rarely obvious and without some gray area.
Yeah, but why are you contextualizing what's happening in the show with our current court system? I mean,
well, it's not just our court system; it's our definition. Rape is a crime.
No, I get it.
Right, so there has to be some notion of what defines it.
Yeah, you know? I don't
think rape is very gray.
I don't think so either.
I don't either.
I mean, how many times do you have to hear Jaime say, "I don't care"?
Yeah. And actually, it's interesting because, you know, I've watched the scene a few times, but listening to it, when all you have to do is concentrate on the sound, you can hear that even if she's not saying no, she's making sounds that are not consensual.
Right.
You know, it's struggling.
She sounds like a wounded animal.
Well, yes.
And I think one of the things, and I punt on whether this is our culture versus their culture.
Right.
But in terms of our definitions of these things, the state of mind of the victim is not really an element of whether or not something is rape. If you ultimately end up enjoying it, forgiving the person, thinking it was okay or whatever, but they forced themselves on you, that is still sexual assault. That's still rape. It's just that you end up being okay with it. There's no such thing as retrospective consent. You have to give your consent, and if you push past someone's consent, that's just it. And an analogy is, if you break into someone's home and they end up enjoying your company and giving you a nice meal and having a good time, that's fine. You still committed breaking and entering. You still broke that law. You still committed that crime. It's just that the victim ended up being kind of okay with it. And that's what our courts have come to struggle with less and less as we've reformed this. It used to be very much the state of mind. If you showed any notion that you were led somebody on, all of a sudden, you know, it mattered, and now we're coming to this to a stronger sense that no, it's about, you don't get to decide that someone else is going to like it ultimately. You don't get to substitute your judgment for theirs.
Well, I would use another analogy. I would use basic high school wrestling. You get to tap out when it's too much.
Right.
Yeah.
That too.
And was she tapping out? So when, for instance, Nikki talks about it, is it implied consent because they knew each other? No. If Jason and I are making love, mm-hmm. and I tap out, and he does not hear that tap out, now we have the crime.
Right.
Right. Or if I ignore it.
Or
yeah.
You will ignore it. You hear it. You know that it happened, but you go past. You don't heed it. You don't respect what it means.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that you're married. It doesn't matter that you know each other.
There's no gray area there.
No.
So to defend Nikki a little bit, I don't agree with her definition of rape at all. I'm with you guys.
Yeah.
It's whether it's a purely legal sense or the way you guys are talking about, I'm totally with you. But I think what she was trying to say in the gray is something that we were discussing beforehand, that there, and I don't really know how to phrase this well, but there are gradations and differences here. This is obviously a situation where you watch and listen where Cersei doesn't give consent. It's very clear. She says no.
Right.
Her reasons for it seem to be that it's inappropriate, which it is.
Yes.
And that's really what Jaime seems to be reacting
not
to.
Not that's ever bothered her before.
She's saying,
no.
Not here, stop it, not here. Now, she says stop it, so it's rape. But I think what she's saying is there is an element of gray not in whether or not it's rape, but an element in gray on how you judge it. On the list of horrible things that Jaime Lannister
has done. What it means
to
the characters. It's not a stranger assault.
Right, it isn't. He's not stalking down women.
Mountain did. It's not some war crime.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interpersonal crime.
Right.
It's still a crime. It's still an awful thing. But there's complexity to it is maybe a better term than gray.
Right.
Yes.
But
I think the complexity
is in communication. And this is, I will say this one thing, and Jason and I have talked about this before, because I've had these conversations before with people, and I think it's what was communicated. What was the tapping out?
Right.
Is it the word no?
Uh-huh.
You know, was there a safe word? And you'll hear guys say, well, what do I have to do? Get them to sign off on every move? And I'm like, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not on a piece of paper per se, but if you're not talking and sober enough, both of you, to have a conversation while this is happening.
And I would question whether Cersei was in a frame of mind she could possibly give consent.
If consent is a gray area for
you
to back off.
Because she could have been totally drunk off her ass.
Yeah.
And it is the middle of where her son is lying in state.
Right.
Yeah, she's... Even if she had given consent, there's an argument that she's probably not in a mental state to do
She was...
Right.
She, yeah.
Right.
And I think Jaime knew that, because he had the doors closed.
I mean, this was definitely
I think he was being sadistical.
The first quote is definitely true. I think this is... I mean, what seemed to be portrayed is this is Jaime striking out in anger and powerlessness, and it's an awful, awful thing.
Right. Well, rape is about power. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well. So the one thing I saw online a lot is people saying, well, what about SVU? SVU always shows much, much worse sexual assaults, ones that are sadistic and cruel, not just, you know, forceful or whatever this was. And it's like, well, on SVU, it's unambiguously always a crime.
Right.
The good guys are always trying to stop the bad guys from doing it.
Right.
And I think when people, some of the articles are like, oh, this is the horrible sexual politics of the show. I actually think this might be a good thing, because now we're having a conversation about the nuances of this, you know, of what our attitudes are toward this. What is our attitude toward this? Yeah. What are we seeing? This is a Rorschach test for sexual assault.
How many different articles did you see this week about the discussions about the gray areas of rape?
At least
you know,
four.
There were so many different articles that, and I wasn't even really trying to look, you know, and so it was kind of pervasive in the conversation, and you know, it's a subject that really can't have too much conversation, to be honest.
Yeah,
and going to your point, I think it's important that it's a character that people like.
Yeah.
Because the SVU doesn't teach you anything.
Right.
Right? Those are monsters that are never humanized, that do awful things. And the reality is, where there's a problem and an impact that can be made through conversation is actually the people who you know that you think are good people, who have done something, who haven't thought about the consequences of their actions, who haven't thought about this beforehand and do bad things that might have been avoided had they really sat down and thought about, this is what I want to do in this situation.
Right.
Yeah. And I think what Mo Ryan said is right. It's going to be how they play it out that's really important.
Yeah. Big time.
He's been naughty for 2 days. I haven't been walking him enough in the last 2 days.
So I think let's do one or two more. And then
we interrupted with her.
Where were we? So we
I think we were okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Stephanie Brown Anderson. It's not that it went too far. It's that I don't get what they're doing. It's like they gave characters certain development arcs and then realized they took it too far. They need to bring it back so they have them do things that don't make sense. And the rape was unnecessary as a plot device. If all you need is to get Jamie and Cersei at a certain level of sympathy with the audience, looking forward to Michelle McLaren swooping in with her flaming director's chair and saving the day.
So, yeah, that's the one I wanted to make sure you got to, because I did have a comment about this. I think that, so, as somebody who's read this segment of the book, I'm actually not persuaded that the book isn't rape, given the way that it's written. But it's certainly much less unambiguous than this is, or much more ambiguous than this is. But what I think, the reason I think they did it, it fits with the theme of the rest of this episode, which is that these are bad people. As we get into the rest of the recap, Egret is a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
The Hound is a bad person. We create these romantic little road trippy notions of them being redemptive. Jamie's a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that they're really trying to deliver is like, no, these are ruthless people who are fighting a war. You're going to see, you know, they'll have these cute moments and they'll have these charming things because they're human beings. They're complex. They have that part of their character. So the Hound is not unambiguously evil. He has soft moments. Jamie's not unambiguously evil, but they're not unambiguously good or redeemed or just because they're cute, you like them.
Yeah.
And I liked that element of this episode. I liked that every single story delivered a gut punch on a character that you might be worshiping.
Yeah. And my whole, my overall thought on the episode was, it's broken chains, broken trusts, and broken customs.
Yeah.
And like you said, everything was a gut punch. Everything was also a broken trust or custom or something that people held with a lot of value up until this episode, until these things happened.
Because chains aren't always shackles. Sometimes chains are holding your ship together.
Yeah.
Sometimes chains are structural. Not slave-based.
When it's something like a custom, then it's something that keeps your society from falling into anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that could be, you know, some sort of metaphor for the relationship too, is that, you know, so many things have impacted the relationship that it's falling into anarchy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, Stephanie's a book reader, and by the way, happy birthday, Stephanie.
Oh, happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Stephanie. You know, and I think it's very hard for book readers going forward. It isn't this one-to-one that we saw in books one and two. That, you know, the show is very, very close to the books, in my opinion, and, you know, there's a lot of consolidation and things like that, but going forward, there's going to be a lot that goes off track.
Yeah.
I think, and so they achieve different ends, the same ends by different means, or maybe even deviate further, and that's going to hurt those book readers who maybe want a more loyal, you know, or more rigid retelling. And for the rest of us, you know, I'm thankful that I haven't read the books, so I don't have to have those this time.
I go the other way. I want a good show, and I'm willing to read the books if the show is good to get more background. But I don't need the show to beat the books. I think it's a much better TV show than the books are books.
Mm-hmm.
It deserves to be to tell its own story.
And I'm on a different end. I'm a book reader from the beginning, and I think the books are much better than the show. I would be,
right.
But I have learned to. Not completely. I still have those pangs of like, oh, that was better in the books. Yeah. You know, that's and almost everything is just because I think I prefer the format. Right. But you have to detach. If you don't detach, you will, like, folks that can't detach should just learn not to watch.
Right? Yeah,
because you're never going to be happy. It's never going to be its own.
They are going to be two separate entities, and you just have to let them exist.
Yeah,
that's like all those people who read the, you know, Charlene Harris, True Blood, Sidney Stackhouse novels, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Alan Ball just crushed that, you know.
Right.
The very first season.
Turned
just
it into 6 feet under.
Yeah.
30
well,
seconds
it,
in, he...
Yeah.
It was awesome. And he got the author to, you know, go out and do a little PR campaign and say, look, I gave the show my characters. They can do whatever they want with them, you know.
Okay, so I got. We've been running pretty long on this, but I want to get the rest of the listener feedback out.
Yes.
So let's see and run through that.
Christina Scanapeggio. What's shocking to me is the perception from people involved in making of the scene, as well as from the audience, that this was consensual sex and that Cersei deserved it. There was not a whisper of consent in the scene. And I think the whole no means yes and she was asking for it school of thought is passé, no?
Yep.
Yes.
And Crystal Ferguson.
Yes. How about just wrong, not passé?
Yeah. Just incorrect.
That makes
yeah.
it sound like it's out of style.
Yeah,
no, this one should not be coming back.
Fucking 90s,
as,
man.
As someone who grew up in Texas, I can tell you it was actually
it's
in style
a
for a while.
Yeah.
It's in style. Okay.
Crystal Ferguson, it's a new name, I think. Yes. I don't think the show has established the deep bond connection between Jaime and Cersei the way the books do. I don't want to give anything away, so I'm just going to say that in the books, I really felt that Jaime was devastated and heartbroken that his entire life was Cersei. I haven't seen this developed in the show. The incest is the focus of the show. Mm. And then Jackie...
Martin supports that basic idea that the show's relationship is
right.
Different.
Uh-huh.
Jackie Burgett. It sickened me when Cersei tried manipulating Jaime into killing Tyrion, seductively offering a kiss, then gasping, especially after her rejecting him on at least two previous occasions. He knew that she was only using him, so it enraged him. Was that an excuse to rape her? Of course not. Without knowing where the rest of the story is going, I'd prefer that he'd have taken the high road and told her to fuck off. It would have been interesting to see if the show's writers would be able to live this scene down and redeem themselves. I have to say, of all the comments, Jackie's is the one that I'm really behind.
Yeah.
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 I would have to
So the only part
that.
I don't, like, I don't think the writers necessarily need to redeem themselves on this
Well, they just
scene.
Need to make sure that it's not just there for the scandal, you know.
It shouldn't be pure exploitation.
Yes, exactly. It needs to do something to their relationship as characters.
Yes. I don't know why the assumption is that it's not. I mean, like Jason pointed out, they're working off a script. And
yeah.
as much as people want to freak out about it, and yeah, in the book, Cersei does say, do me now, to right. be clear, by
Literally.
The end of the sequence. Yeah. Yes, that is the quote, do me now, now, now.
She goes full porn.
Right, she goes full porn. But it's definitely after an extended period of no, 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 uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that makes the book very, you know, I think you get a lot of even more disagreement than you have now.
It makes it kind of funny because that one scene where she's getting all drunk and preparing the girls to be raped.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
funny's an interesting word, but sure.
I'm not gonna do this.
Yeah.
Rape preparation clinic.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, remember?
Yeah.
Like,
no, don't.
No, absolutely.
Like it was part of being a royal.
She yeah.
It was like her Oprah of rape. And you're going to get raped, and you're going to get raped. All right.
Well,
little...
you know, I still think one of the most interesting parts of that scene is her recoiling when he, you know, touches her face with the hand. And
uh-huh.
it made me show-wise question how much she ever really loved Jaime. Because if she really loved him, that wouldn't recoil her. I can
right.
see maybe being a little... you know, stunned because this cold metal thing is caressing your face and you forgot about it.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it made me think she never really loved him.
Well, I think they're definitely, there's definitely one side that loves the other one more.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
just
yeah.
look at, as soon as he was away from King's Landing, she was sleeping with her cousin.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Jaime goes through this huge thing where he's never actually been with another woman except
yeah.
his
right.
sister,
it's
which, is,
to him,
which
yeah.
is, you know, kind of sweet in a really creepy kind of way. But I mean, just from there, you understand that, you know.
No, I know. It just really slapped me in the face, literally, with a
right.
gold hand.
That's right.
Yes.
And there's a final one.
There's a final one, okay.
Sasha Horpel. First time looks for me like a rape. But afterwards, Cersei wants something from her brother and uses her best weapon and to reciprocate the kiss several times. Mm. Okay, she told him stop, but only because of the place they are. Remember, Jaime has only one thing that makes him better than Ned Stark.
A head?
When I read that one, I couldn't figure out what it was, but I think you're right.
He has an active nervous system.
Yeah. Not 6 feet under and eating.
Okay, well, I think we've
I will add one little
sure.
little perverted comment. It's not too perverted, but when I was like getting the birds and the bees stuff, an older woman in my life told me out of the blue, after she'd been to a funeral of her father, that death can be an aphrodisiac, and that her husband and her had great sex while she was mourning.
Huh.
I've heard these kinds of stories, too.
I know, and I'm just sitting there thinking, yeah, and you see that sometimes in literature and stuff, and here we have is this dead kid
right.
laying there.
Yeah.
And I remember laughing during the scene, going, oh, are they trying to make another one?
Jamie was.
Yeah.
And it was on Easter, too.
It was.
Yes.
On Easter, we're having this the rape beneath
I think
the body
I think
of
the one
we're having as many awful people as possible.
The one thing about this show is this is not a show of virtue.
No.
No.
Yeah,
so
no, this is a lot of ruthlessness, and it's all the characters seem to get to have a taste of it.
Yeah, definitely.
They all have some larceny and rapey in them.
Isn't that the truth?
Cool. All right, well, let's move on to lighter issues, Mr.
Okay.
Mr. Green.
We're going to do the whirlwind tour of the rest of King's Landing.
Yes, please.
Try to run through. Scene number one, we open with Sansa being rowed in what looks like Gendry's rowboat, because they probably only have one.
Yes.
out to a boat in the mist, and who's there but our favorite, also not good guy.
Boy, Littlefinger.
I gotta say, some of the shots in that sequence are just stunning.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful, and that like Vermeer look on Sansa when she turns back to the camera looking over her shoulder, just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, this show really does stunning work.
Yeah.
It was a great open. You know, from the wedding and her chasing off, and then you get Littlefinger.
Yeah.
It's good to see that Donos has that much upper body strength.
Yeah. he was chugging
out there. I don't
know
if I could row out that far.
Yes. So, you know, Dantos continues the long tradition of being an idiot, and Littlefinger offs him and explains how, you know, he had tricked Sansa into coming with him, and the necklace was a fake and all that, and then proceeds to tell her once again that, you know, I did tell you, we're all liars here.
Right.
And then, you know, does Sansa get it this time? Like,
no.
Finally, or no?
No.
No, we're still on, like, oh, thank God I'm safe.
Yeah.
How many Starks have to be beheaded for you to figure this out?
Yeah. All of them.
I did somewhat, a little bit, get your father killed.
Yeah.
But I am more or less responsible, but come here, let me put my arm around
you.
Yeah.
So they're heading
really
off to
like
the Vale,
mom.
Right?
Yes.
Aaron.
They're that's where he was
Lysa
supposed
Aaron,
to go, yes.
The creepier, the only person in Westeros creepier than Littlefinger.
Right, but it's Aunt Lysa.
Aunt Lysa, that's a good name.
It's Aunt Lysa.
Yeah, but can you imagine the progeny between those two?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, little baby Baelish sucking on Lysa Aaron's
stomachs here.
I literally just got an image of Tommy Carcetti.
That's awful. That is awful.
Oh, you're a horrible man.
I'm hoping she's a little.
Hey, we can put it on the cover of Time Magazine.
Right. Shane finally tops me in a show.
Hey,
I do have one question. There's
some show left. You got something on the.
Oh, not me. I'm saying you got a chance to take back the belt.
I do have one question.
Yes.
When was the last time we saw Lysa?
Season one.
Okay,
season one.
So that's
she's
a very fuzzy memory for
administered
me.
The trial of Tyrion.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was the one that was breastfeeding her little
I'm sure
child.
She looks amazing by now.
That kid is probably 14.
That's going to be a really
God,
awkward sequence.
Yeah.
To
okay.
You know, I thought it was interesting. A lot of the discussion I heard this week about the Baelish sequence was, you know, does this... Okay, so Baelish comes out and says, although I can't believe there are people who didn't get the fact that he's basically saying, I orchestrated this.
Uh-huh.
We don't know who his collaborator was, whether it was Tywin or Elena or both or whoever, right?
Or Dantos, if he has a shot at it.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they managed to close up that, you know, mystery of who was behind it very quickly, which I was kind of stunned by. That's a really rapid pace.
I have a look of mild interest.
Yeah.
Well, I think it becomes sort of a non-issue. It's like, okay, we'll just tell them who did it, and the real issue is the trial, because nobody's going to believe that Littlefinger did it, because
and also
he wasn't
the truth
there.
Isn't out. It's out to Sansa. Right. It's out to us what the mechanism is, but the mechanism is not really the crucial issue.
Yeah.
And I would say in the scene, he very much admits to kidnapping her and using the necklace to lure her.
Right.
But he doesn't call attention to any missing stones. He doesn't mention Joffrey at all.
Right.
So if you're paying attention, you've probably put two and two together. But if you're not, I mean, I've seen more than enough folks comment on there that haven't. I mean, it's kind of like 50-50 of folks that are following along. Yeah. So I wouldn't say it's completely out of the bag.
The necklace doesn't seem to have any other narrative purpose. It's like, why would Dantos give you some necklace that's made of, you know, paste?
Although I feel like we have a little bit of a Chekhov's gun there with it, like, lying on Dantos's dead body.
Yeah.
So, did it seem like Baelish had a new weird accent to anybody?
He slipped into his native Irish brogue at one point.
I was just like, wow, he just came off the bench all guns.
He's Scottish.
Scottish.
I just think he was like, screw it, I only get like 6 lines a season at this point. I'm not even trying.
Exactly.
All right, from there we go to Marjorie and Olenna, which was, I think, a sweet little scene, just because I think it really fleshed out Marjorie for the first time as something more than just scheming Marjorie. Mm-hmm. We see her actually seem to care about how awful Joffrey dying was, and seem to care about her grandmother. You know, having her husband die and have to identify the body and all of that. Olenna is still Olenna, and I think we get out of it that Marjorie didn't know it was coming.
Marjorie didn't know it was coming, and that Olenna seems to be rolling with it okay.
Right.
Yeah.
She's got a plan.
She's got a plan, and she always has a plan. And, and I think, again, it comes back to Cersei's, you know, what is power question, and Olenna is in this position where it's like, it doesn't matter what weird machinations happen around some unfolding plot with murders and betrayals, I've got all the food.
Right.
So I get my way.
Right.
Yeah.
I could pretty much come out.
And there's nobody who's going to inherit from me that you're going to get a better deal out of. So she always brings it right back to, but we have all the food and money.
Right.
Or we have all the food anyway. And so I like that you know, it clarified so much in the story. It's like, the Tyrells don't have to worry about who the queen is.
And this combined with the birds and beads seems to mean that Tommen is going to be a very lucky man.
Well, it's they do have that rule that you are betrothed. That's how Ned got married, right?
His brother
died. Mm-hmm. And so you're the younger brother is supposed to marry your widow. That's how it works. So Tommen would be the next in line. And he's going to be the king, and Marjorie wants to be the queen. So
everybody's happy.
And Tommen's older here than in the book.
Yes, because he's 8 in the book.
It's not insane that he would be betrothed to her.
It's kind of amusing in the book, because we discussed this on the Facebook page, but the worst part of the book changes that came out of this episode was by far the fact that he's older, and thus we will not be seeing Sir Pounce.
Yes.
Right. Tommen's favorite kitten.
Tommen's kittens. Aww. Well, he could still be a fool.
He could be. From there, we went into the Sept of Baelor. A little bit later, we come to sexy times with Oberyn Martell.
Yeah, some positive sex.
Positive sex.
Now we have the opposite kind of sex.
Right. Exactly.
It's a wonderful sex.
Yeah.
It is. We've got a fivesome.
Yes.
If I spoke French, I could probably come up with something better than that. You know, there really is quite a long bit of, you know, Dorn cultural norm conversation.
And a good sales pitch for bisexuality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doubles your market right there.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And since, you know, as Alia or Ilaria points out, he doesn't really have trouble converting.
Right.
You know, he's going to do okay for himself.
Yeah.
But then Tywin storms in and they have a fun little conversation back and forth that starts with accusations. I love the back and forth of, you know, you study poison.
Yeah.
You know,
yes, I did.
he's like, it looks like he was poisoned, and you study poison at the Citadel. He's like, I did. That's why I know it was poison.
Right.
Dumbass. Yes. Fantastic.
So here's the thing I don't quite get. I get that, you know, Tywin's trying to create an alliance with Dorne, a little stronger, get them back into the Seven Kingdoms, that kind of thing. What is his motive for wanting Oberyn, or have we seen his motive for wanting Oberyn to be one of the judges of the trial? Is that considered something that he's giving to Oberyn, or that Oberyn would do for him in exchange for...
He seemed to imply it was an honor, and Oberyn was like, really? No.
Right? Yeah,
so like not, yeah. It was a false honor. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it may... So I'm going to throw out just... It may be a sense of impartiality and having a certain... You've got a Martell, right. You've got a Tyrell, you've got a Lannister.
Oberyn has no investment in who killed who, and so he's going to be relatively unbiased as opposed to...
And now you have three great houses
presiding
over it, where you're not going to have a Baratheon, you're not going to have a Stark.
So Tywin is asking for legitimacy. That's what he's saying. You will help this be a legitimate trial, and I am willing to give you some favors in return, and since, on small council.
And since, as we'll learn in the next scene in King's Landing, you know... He probably already owns the Mace Tyrell vote.
Right.
He's not necessarily risking anything if you're just going for a majority vote.
Right.
Right? Like,
so,
it's...
are you guys saying there's no quid pro quo here?
I think... No, there is. I think...
Give you the mountain. You get on
here.
Well,
there's the mountain. Yeah, I'm going to give you the mountain. Yeah. For sure. But I think there's also a quid pro quo on the judging thing. You be a judge for me, and I will give you more access to the government of the Seven Kingdoms.
Right. I mean, the big alignment there is you're going to get a spot on the small council. You're going to get the mountain.
Right.
And you're going to keep Dorne loyal.
Right.
And now they've got the Reach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they've got the Lannisters, and they occupy the area around King's Landing. But the rest of it's, you know, pretty fuzzy. So that's like 2.5 kingdoms out of 7.
Right.
It's, you know, he's got to start consolidating. If you're not at war with one of them, you might as well get him on board for something fairly cheap.
And he's depending on the Martells for all of his money now. It'd be nice to have another financier.
Yeah, the Tyrells.
Yeah.
The Tyrells and the Martells are very similar.
Oh, sorry, Martells. So the Tyrells. But it would be
Martin
nice
could have done better there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know. There were how many people are named Kevin? Just the
so
one.
So how many of you guys actually believed... I guess I can only ask Molly, who hasn't read the book. Did you believe Tywin when he said, no, I didn't have anything to do with it?
No way. No way.
I don't believe anyone who, when you ask them if they deny something, they say categorically.
Right.
Like, really, if you ever use that word on a denial, you obviously did it.
Yeah.
Like, no one categorically denies something they didn't
do. He sounds like one of Darth Vader's assistants.
Exactly.
Like a Moff or something.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
He's a Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah.
He should have thrown in a dynasty, and it might have sounded
the legacy of your dynasty.
That's right.
Your kinky fuck.
So it looks like Oberyn's going to participate in the trial, so that's going to be awesome.
Yes. I thought it was also interesting, just there at the end, whether or not it was lip service or for whatever reason, he did reference Dany and her dragons.
Right.
Yeah.
They're starting to make her an issue.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That he's actually paying attention
It'd be
to.
Nice if people started mentioning the ice zombies. I'm really kind of looking forward to people figuring that one out, too.
Those would be fun.
Those would be nice, too.
Hey, one thing at a time.
Yeah, but, I mean, you really got the sense in this episode that Elena and Tywin are the only two that really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what's wrong with everybody else? I mean, are they just massively uninformed? Yeah, that's it.
Too much ill-advised sex. Either there's too many people or not enough consent.
It's
all
too much
wrong
pie.
Here what's happening.
Well, like in real life, there are very few people who are looking at the big picture. Most people are concerned with their everyday existence, and the big picture escapes them for whatever reason. So.
Well, Tywin's too much on the ball here through all of this to... I mean, he's just got too many things already lined up to have come up with all of this after Joffrey dies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
He's been following this for a while, I agree.
Whether or not he had something to do with this particular death of Joffrey, I had to think Tywin was already thinking of a way to bump him off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel like he was going to want to share power.
He's too smart to know that wasn't going to end well.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you also had scenes from last season when Joffrey was sitting on the Iron Throne and he had to come up to the Iron Throne to tell him about the small council and things like that. And, you know, it's like you could just see the power tension and Joffrey just shrink. And so you knew that things had been in my mind, Tywin had been thinking about these kinds of things for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Tywin, you know, is looking at this like, oh, somebody saved me a boatload of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, seriously. Yeah.
That was easy.
Yeah.
So lastly, we come to his other son, Tyrion, and we get a little bit of, you know, the procedural drama as Pod comes in and Tyrion gets to learn things. Shay is gone. Mm-hmm. Everyone like to know. At least that's what Sansa's Pod's gone. Saying. Sansa is gone. Oh, no. Oberyn is judging. Varys is selling Tyrion out, like he said. And Bronn isn't allowed in because he's a vagabond and a ragamuffin.
That's kind of wack. Scallywag. I really like this scene. I think this is my favorite scene of the episode. I think because it's a contrast to all the others, where this here we actually did see some genuine affection between characters, and Tyrion speaking against his own interests. It's like, Pod, testify against me, you know, just mm-hmm. or cooperate with them however they ask, and get your land and be a lord and all. It's awesome, and it's better than sticking by me and we both die.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, this was the old Yeller scene uh-huh. from last episode yes. with Shay done right with yeah. like logical normal people. like I didn't want to let you down. Yeah, but you see, here's the thing: they're gonna kill you if you don't say no. So you should say yes. I already said no. You need to run. Okay.
Yeah.
How is that hard?
Right.
Like, we're done. You know, and it was right.
It was there's like two moments on there's some parallels between this episode and the Mad Men episode. And on Mad Men, we had Sally telling Don that she loved him, you know, as a daughter or to her father, and have Tyrion say, "There's never been a more loyal squire." It's like those are the lines we've been waiting for
uh-huh.
out of these characters,
yeah.
you know, in the storyline.
I enjoy how twisted TV has gotten that you had to clarify that Sally Draper was telling Don that she loved him as a daughter. Because well, thanks to shows like Game of Thrones.
If people don't watch Mad Men, they might think that Sally Draper is his wife.
Or his that since they're both Drapers, incest is best.
Right.
as Game of Thrones.
The other parallel is that Don and Arya, Don and Sally go road tripping and they dine and dash. Or they almost dine and dash. And Arya and the Hound actually do dine and dash.
Yes, they do.
Against the rock.
They bash Dine and Dash.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have anything else on King's Landing before we...
No.
All right, so let's move on to Molly. We have some audio on your segment in Jon Snow in
Do we want to... Okay, so I'm just going to ask this question.
Sure.
Do we want to do that first? Because we
yeah,
have...
Yeah, let's go ahead and run it.
Okay.
It's the part where the Rangers arrive.
Yeah.
You want to just do that? Okay.
Okay.
We'll run that. So here we go with Jon Snow.
Rangers returning.
The Watchers, help it!
Thought you'd have blue eyes by now.
What took you so long?
We were held up.
By what?
Chains. We were guests of the mutineers across this keep.
And the mutineers stayed.
They're not going anywhere. They've got Custer's food and his wives. Poor girls. Never thought they'd miss their daddy.
Carl's running things now. He's the one put a knife through Custer's mouth.
We need to ride north and kill them all.
We just went over this, boy. Justice can wait.
It's not about justice. I told the Wildlings we had over 1,000 men at Castle Black alone. Carl and the others know the truth as well as we do. How long do you think they'll keep that information to themselves when the Wildlings are peeling their fingernails off? Mansa's all he needs to crush us, he just doesn't know it yet. But as soon as he gets his hands on them, he will. Then he'll throw his full strength at us. And even if every one of us kills 100 Wildlings, there's still not a thing we can do to stop them.
Pip. I lost the line there. I don't think I can kill a Wildling.
Poor Pip. Bad cut.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right.
Yeah.
Miss Molly.
Yeah. So, Sam. Aw, Sam. He cares so much for Gilly, and yet he's so worried about her. So we first see them. He's walking through the Castle Black Yard, and raper, thief, robber, raper, blah, 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 you know. He's just going on and on and on. I was just like, wow, they don't get a lot of good people up here, do they?
some you know, second sons.
How did you wind up here, Sam?
And you'd think there'd be more thieves and, like, vandalists and that sort of thing. But it was really, like, 85% rapists.
A lot of rapists. Yeah. And then this, yeah. Which makes me think the standard for rape is relatively, like, normal. It's not like you have to actually bash someone's skull in.
Right.
And so that's what makes me think that that Jamie did cross the line for their culture, because they had a lot of rapists. There must be a lot of things that constitute rape.
Yeah. And clearly any woman that's up near the wall must be a whore, because that's what everyone keeps calling Gilly to Sam, including his boss. I don't like him, so I didn't look up his name. Sorry. And nobody believes he killed the White Walker because he's Sam the Doughboy. And his main concern is that she's safe, and he doesn't feel like she can be safe at Castle Black. Unfortunately, he can't say it in a way that makes her believe him. So
that's probably because he's horribly wrong.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah. I mean, especially once we see what Molestown looks like.
This is bad choice, Sam.
Sam has made the wrong choice.
Poorly.
And she just feels like he's getting rid of her. Like, you know, he's done with her, and he's just, you know, she's sloughing her off.
Probably actually safer here because, you know, if any one person goes after her, there's 99 others who don't want him to do it.
Right.
Whereas down in the town, she was like immediately on the
butcher's part of the meat market.
Yeah, she's right on the meat market right away.
At least there's the threat of, like, you know, as much as they let them go to Molestown and purchase, the rape of her in
the castle.
Castle Black seems like there would be enforcement of the rules.
There's not a black beyond the black. If you start committing crimes inside the black, they're just going to kill you.
Right.
Exactly.
Right? That's the whole deal. It's like you can steal a chicken and they'll kill you.
Yeah.
In Molestown, everyone politely looks the other way about that.
It seems kind of Deadwoodish.
Yeah.
So
that's what they said at John's hearing, too. It's like, well, everybody goes to Molestown and, you know, has a whore.
Yeah. But we don't, but I think that I think she'd actually be safer in the castle, plus zombie army.
Right.
And also wildly army coming up from
wild
the
things, south. Zombies.
I could be in a castle or I could be in a shanty whorehouse.
Yeah, because that sounds really smart.
That's so great.
And so then we see Molestown, and it's truly disgusting, as one might expect. You know, the first woman that talks to Gilly is like, "Oh, you're a wildling."
I could sell you.
And she said it with glee, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good for Gilly. And, you know, Sam is there trying to, you know, make arrangements with the apparent owner or madam of the brothel, and
she's a general innkeeper.
Basically babysitting and cooking.
Babysitting, cooking, and
laundry.
She's the elsewhere engine.
Yeah.
of the wall.
And there's no way she'll end up doing other work.
There's
no other work. Maybe.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so what will really happen is that she will do other work and you just won't know about it because...
The ugly girls can sweep.
Yeah.
They really got to get Ian McShane to, like, just do a little, a little cameo.
Yeah.
So the last time we see Gilly, it's best for you. That's her line, I think. But it's clearly not for her, and she feels abandoned.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, the only person she trusted is just...
She's about to be gang raped.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful.
It's
much
worse
horrible. Than what happened to Cersei.
Yeah.
And I think it, again, plays into the theme of the bit. It's like Sam is responding to the reality that all these heroes of the wall are really these horrible guys.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so we're seeing that theme.
Because they might be masturbating.
And he's going the other way. He's kind of... No, they're rapists and... Thieves.
Yeah.
You're right. They are terrible people.
Right. They actually are. This is their punishment.
But who is in the show is not a rapist.
Exactly, but then he trusts this even worse environment, you know.
Right.
Sam has not raped anyone yet.
No.
That's next episode.
It's going to be Tyrion.
It's going to be
unpleasant. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, even just as bad as sending Gilly there. It's Gilly and a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see that corner where that baby's going to have to live in running water on the floor?
God knows what the baby's going to be used for.
I mean, even in eras like these, I think they had more of a basic sense of hygiene than Sam seems to have.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Certainly for children.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely his
It's not a place for a baby.
Or heat.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Worst idea yet, Sam.
I really wish they had picked a different name than Gilly. I just can't get past the SNL Kristen Wiig Gilly. And so
I had never gone there until you said that.
Thank you. Now that's every stuck forever.
Yeah, now that's stuck in my head too. Thank you, Shane.
Every time Sam says, Gilly, and I keep seeing that stupid wig and that goofy dance, you know.
Oh, my God. You're a bad man, Shane. You're taking the black, Shane. I'm sending you to the wall. You're going to guard Canada.
Sounds like fun.
So would you like me to go through the wild
So we have the...
It kind of leads into...
We listened to the upshot of John's bit.
Yeah. The reason I say it leads into it is because the boy from the village is right there telling them about the attack.
Right, right.
When they hear the Ranger's return horn. So...
Yeah, so I think we can just go to the wild.
So, yeah. That's why I asked.
Sure.
The first thing we see is Ygritte getting someone right in the back or head.
The
back
of the
it was
head.
A kill shot.
The guy's saying, he's like playing with his son and saying, "Oh, your mom boils the best potatoes in the right to the throat."
Yeah. It was a very sweet.
And she had not a wince on her face.
No, she was not a moment's
hesitation, regret, or problem.
She was a soldier.
She looked like she was. She was very intent on getting her kill count up.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
She wants a confirmed kill.
Yes.
is a kill is a kill.
That's right.
Where'd that little kid go?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that poor little boy is the only one to survive out of the entire village.
Apparently the Thin doesn't understand that, you know, veal is better than beef.
No, they really don't. But they do use him in a way that's, very effective.
So did you guys feel like this might, speaking of Peter Baelish, that this might have been a bit of a more is more performance? I'm going to eat your mama and your papa. You go tell the crows that I ate your mama and your papa.
They've spent a lot of time taking the Thins, and I think the thought was probably that Ygritte and Tormund are actually pretty likable folk.
Yeah.
And that if we're going to feel a little bit of danger, we need to have
some actual barbarians.
Right, right. Yeah. And instead we got Xerxes the God King.
He was a little Xerxes, wasn't he?
On that note, actually, on Inside the Episode, they say that the Thin are the wildlings that the wildlings don't like.
Right.
They're the most feared of all the northern tribes, and everything for them is fighting, warfare, and killing. And that's all they care about. And apparently eating people. So the brutal attack happens. It's quick and painful. And
did any of those wildlings look really all that, like, terror? I mean, like, the only shot that I thought really looked completely badass was when Xerxes...
How did we
know? He's like, comes over.
We lost you for a second there, Shane. Give us news again.
Oh, I'm sorry. When the Thin comes down with the battle axe, that was completely badass. But Tormund and a lot of the wildlings just look goofy in those big rags.
I fucking chilled down my spine with
that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was pretty awesome. That first shot, especially.
That first, her look in her eyes, just like, wow.
Love that actress.
Yeah, she has got no ambiguity about what she's doing.
Yeah,
I think I've just been watching too much Vikings. I mean,
we started watching that last week.
Maybe.
Those raids are badass.
I gotta give it to the Vikings. Yeah,
I mean, they got these cool ass, you know, semi mohawks and ponytails.
Yeah,
they're
no dragons, no zombies, no magical this or that. We're actual Vikings.
They got a wooden shield and two hand axes, and they're going to town, man.
Those would be my people.
I feel like the Viking show has got to be the most repetitive thing ever. What's this episode about?
It's about Vikings.
Raiding.
Raiding and deciding who's in charge of the raiding.
That's exactly it, and I'm glued to every episode. I cannot get enough, and
I might need to see this because I do like me some action.
I watched one or two episodes last week, and they had a lot of fun. I just jumped in the middle. I don't care who's in charge.
It's one big loop.
The fun I had watching what was that show? Pacific Rim.
Exactly. It's like, to me, there's
the fight. It's still going on. This is awesome.
on the show, there's double load.
The Pacific Rim, it takes an hour and a half to get to anything.
Yeah.
I don't care about your emotions. Just fight
Brooding jacks, you know?
No, Vikings, you have Donald Logue, you have the hot chick, and then you have, like, 15 of the same guy. Like the blonde guy with the body
bottom. I love the Donald Logue's in it. Seriously. It's like the casting people were like, we're not going to try. He's just like a name.
It's a Viking police procedure.
They pulled him off of Sons of Anarchy. They had to rewrite Sons of Anarchy last season so he could go do this Viking
show. He's Detective Thunmar.
I'm not kidding. It was like a big deal.
They can't do anything to make him look badass next to these guys either, because he's like a foot shorter than him, and he's got this weird gait when he walks. Yeah, that would be better. No, but the last thing I want to say about that show, completely badass Shield Maidens on that show. Some of those girls can, like, shame a Greek. I mean, they look fucking
all I'm
cool.
thinking of is a giant poster that just says Vikings, and in big quotes, it just says, badass.
It was like that big ass spider movie.
It was big ass tomorrow.
And Jason's whole review just kept saying a big ass is big ass. Oh my god! So basically, it's a mud ball orgy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What's wrong with that?
Like two episodes last week, and
it has mud balls screaming
out of
it.
You're gonna have a lot of fun.
Okay.
Come
on.
You
wanted to have fun.
Okay. So yeah. So let's quickly
go back to the wildlings.
So the Thin and the wildlings have killed everyone, and they send the kid over to Castle Black, and of course, kid knows exactly where to go, and he's sitting there with the crows and. They're having an argument about whether to go out and save the villagers or be on watch against the wall. And then they hear the rangers returning, the scene we just heard. And, you know, John's like, hey, listen, they have a lot. We have almost nothing. I lied to get, you know, to get them to believe that we have 1,000 people here so that they wouldn't just come straight here. but if they find out about the mutineers, and if they, you know, if they torture the mutineers, which you know they're going to do, then they're going to know everything, and we're going to be screwed. So this isn't.
So I got to say, generally speaking, I don't find John and Danny to be very interesting characters.
Right.
Right, because they don't, especially Danny. Just you know, it's like, is there ever going to be a thing that is a challenge for her being on, you know, horses hard or whatever? Is anyone ever going to say no to Danny? Is John ever going to fail anything? And I think Alan pointed out last week is that they're on the hero's quest. The hero's quest character tends to be less nuanced than the others.
Uh-huh.
I'm really liking, though, that both of them are learning how to lead.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm enjoying their development. Like, I'm not seeing the other characters develop. They're not changing who they are. They are who they are.
Right.
And these are the two characters who are kind of growing into who they're becoming.
Yeah.
And we're seeing John here become a real military leader.
Yeah, because my reaction to this scene was, oh, John's finally got a pair. Nice.
Yeah.
You know, he's finally taking some responsibility and some leadership of the situation.
Right, and he said, we have like 100 guys, and is it Meister Aemon who says, yeah, and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I'm 100 years old and blind.
100 years old blind. I'm one of the 100.
And right. Sam's another.
Yeah, Sam. And there's a lot here who you can't really count on.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I thought that was the best part of it, right? Was actually not the part where he convinces them to go after the mutineers or whatever, but actually the part where he backs up his nemesis.
Right.
You know, Alistair Thorne, who spent all the time calling him Lord Snow and looking down on him.
Doesn't mean he's wrong.
Actually calls on him, and he actually backs him up because he's right, which I thought, you know, actually was the more interesting sort of, like, step forward.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Snow's becoming more interesting, and Danny's becoming more interesting as they're getting, they're facing real challenges.
Right.
You know? And not just following some path of the dragon or whatever they're doing.
The Watchers could win a rape-off against the Wildlings. I mean...
Yeah, right.
Maybe after winter. Theme.
Where has the show gone?
The show's gonna be really rapey from here on in. You haven't seen any. It'd be really funny if they were interviewing us, like, oh, you guys haven't seen it. We're gonna scratch out of these scenes.
Seriously, what if they just pull episode 4 off the air? They're like, after the reaction, we know that next week's episode probably would be inappropriate. So we're just going to scuttle it, and we'll see you guys in the fall.
Oh, no, no. Bran skull fucks a badger. No, no. Oh!
But he can bash its brains in with a mallet. Yes, yes, yes. And
dine
eat
and dash,
it.
Baby.
And eat it with a little golden spoon.
Dash and dine.
Everyone's pants are on.
Oh, does that
is Shane
on?
Okay over there?
We're video off. He's at a hotel.
I think
he's
laughing
his ass
off.
Yeah.
But we don't. We can't see him.
No, I can hear him.
Oh, I know we can hear him.
I'm just so saying, sorry.
Molly's losing it here too.
Funny.
Yeah, I'm trying to get off
okay,
mic so
reset.
It's not too loud.
Okay, okay. Are we on to me here?
I think so.
Okay. So I've I'll bat some cleanup here. First, we have Dragonstone. And here we have Sir Davos. And he's
whatever. Move on.
Stannis is excited because his leech burning operation seems to have bared some fruit. Davos tried to, I have this on audio. This is, I think, my favorite audio from the episode. So we're going to play this scene.
Grace,
you're a literary man now. What do you make of that?
Joffrey.
The usurper, Joffrey Baratheon. I said those words when I tossed a leech into the fire, a leech filled with bastard blood. A bastard you set free. I am now faced with a great opportunity, and I am powerless to take advantage of it.
We'll find you an army, Grace. I've been working day and night.
What progress have you made?
I've rallied House Peasbury to your cause.
House Peasbury.
House Musgood?
House Musgood.
And House Hay?
House Hay. They don't have enough men between them to raid a pantry.
Westeros is not the world, Your Grace. We need to look east for ships and men. 10,000 skilled soldiers fight for the Golden Company.
The Golden Company?
Never broken a contract.
They sell swords.
We're willing to use blood magic to put you on the throne, but we're not willing to pay men to fight. Now, the Red Woman's magic is real. Her visions and prophecies may be too, but I've never heard of visions and prophecies winning a war. Soldiers win wars. Soldiers on the ground. It's dirty on the ground.
We don't have any gold.
Not yet.
If I do not press my claim will be forgotten. I will not become a page in someone else's history book. I'm running out of time, Sir Davos. Which means you're running out of time.
All right, so I want to play that because nobody says bastard like Stannis. And this is a show where everyone says bastard like every 5 minutes.
I also true. Like that Stannis made a little joke in there.
Yes, yeah. Stannis makes a little joke. I like that we emphasize Stannis' situation here is like, so the king can die, everything, like the world can fall apart, you still can't conquer anything.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know what all the blood leeches and things like that are going to do, but we actually need an army.
Maybe he's going to kill the entire Lannister army.
Yeah.
Leech by leech.
Well, the scene after, leech by leech. Scene after this, Davos goes to continue his reading lessons, with, Stannis' daughter, and, she tells him not to move his lips while he reads, which is pretty cute.
Yeah.
And I guess they spell knight with a K in their language. She says
apparently.
Can they have the same?
Is that a Monty Python reference?
I guess, yeah, it's totally Monty Python. And then in the midst of this scene, he seems to get an inspiration around writing a letter to the Iron Bank of Braavos. You know, pretty much informing them of Stannis's position. And I needed a little help with here. So what is he saying to Braavos that Stannis is going crazy and you might want to call your loan, or that Stannis has a claim and you might want to fund it?
No, I think what he's going for here is he's either looking just to straight borrow money or a little more nuanced. We know that the Lannisters are heavily in debt to the Iron Bank.
Right.
So the question becomes of, hey, do you want to play both sides of this?
Right, right.
Mm. So, but I assume he's just going for a loan.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it wasn't. He seemed to have such an inspiration, like it was. You would have thought he would have figured out to talk to the Iron Bank if he needed money before this. And it felt like there was some implication around the maneuver of it.
You mean I can put this on my credit card?
Yeah, he's also forging Stannis' name, so, you know, he's having his daughter.
He is the Hand of the King.
He's the Hand of the King, but, yeah, Hand of the King tends to be supposed to run things by the king.
Technically.
And I love the bit where he's talking about, he says that Stannis doesn't have any kind of sense of nuance when it comes to bad behavior.
That, I think,
he doesn't have a complex sense of bad behavior.
I think was the quote of the episode.
That was, no kidding. And he said, there's a difference between being a pirate and a smuggler, and the princess asks what that is, and he says, if you're a famous pirate, you're doing it wrong. Or sorry, if you're a smuggler, you're doing it wrong. Yes. You should be a famous pirate. So, yeah, I like Davos. I'm glad to see him operate here. He has a little agency. Okay, cool. So then we did the Wildings, and Castle Black. So the other bit here, yeah, no, I got him here, is Arya and the Hound.
Oh.
So this is the Don Draper and Sally Draper scene. We have Arya. They're like, you know, they have their horses and they're watering the horses on this land, and the guy comes by, and Arya makes up that this is her father and he fought for the Tullys, and, you know, I halfway expected her to say, unfortunately he's mute.
You know, Arya will learn.
Let me do the talking. Yeah. You know? And the guy says, anybody who you know fought for the Tullys can eat with us, and they can barely contain themselves. That pot of stew. He's just sitting there. They probably haven't eaten in 2 or 3 days, right?
Yeah.
And the Hound, to his credit, manages to get through 6 of the 7 while the guy's praying. Right? And then finally, just like, you know, we ask the stranger not to kill us in our sleep. Eats the pot. But one of the things that came out here, they're calling it the Red Wedding, and there's this idea that Walder Frey really violated the tradition of salt and water, you know, or whatever it was, being bread, rather, salt and bread.
Right, right.
And all this kind of stuff. And the Hound says, none of that matters. You know, clearly it's not an issue. Clearly, you know, if you trust in that kind of thing, you're going to get beheaded.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm a guest in your house.
Yeah, and by the way, you probably shouldn't trust me.
Guy tries to hire him.
Yes.
I like that because it shows that he's later on the hound robs him and is taking off, and Arya wakes up in the middle of it and catches that this happened and runs up to him. It's like she was going to just wake up with like a concussed guy. Right? Yeah. It's like, you were going to abandon me. It's like, fuck it, you know. And then I think this is when the Hound, like I mentioned before, says the theme of the show, which is that, you know, she said, you're not a thief. It's like, you know, you're the worst person in Westeros. It's like, there's plenty worse than me. And how many people have to get beheaded for you to see that?
Yeah.
You know, that I'm average in terms of being terrible. And I think that plays back to Jaime and Cersei. I think that plays back to all the other characters.
Uh-huh.
And to Ygritte and the Wildings and everything. Okay, and then we have the actual breaking of chains, the big moment. Daenerys comes out. They call her on Gay of Thrones, little Christina Aguilera. Little Christina Aguilera comes out up to Meereen, and Meereen is this like huge looking city. It looks like the biggest target she's had to hit, and she's got her guys. Looks like, you know, 20,000 to 50,000 guys lining up, and her voice can carry. I think it might have been an inside joke on Baelish saying, your voices can carry out in the sea. Apparently they carry in the desert, too. You can shout
she's got some pipes.
Into a city, a walled city, and be heard.
Yeah.
On the other side of the wall. It's like, wow, you got dragon voice.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so Meereen sends out a champion. I love this scene.
Yeah, this is great.
This is awesome. And to fight her champion. And, of course, she has 100,000, maybe 50 to 100,000 people total. And she's got 4 people she talks to.
Yeah.
Isn't that just always the way? You know, there's just always these cliques. Right? Barriss and Selmy volunteers. And she's like, no, I need you alive. Mormont volunteers. And she friend zones him hard.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Turns him down. It's not only not only is he friend zoned, but it's a no badassery zone.
Yeah.
So you have to be the friend who doesn't get to do anything cool. And then Dario Naharis says, I am the son of a whore. And I am the new man in your army. I'm the new guy. Let me kill this man for you. So she asked, you know, do you want a horse? And I thought this was another theme of the piece as well. He says, no, you know, she says, horses are faster than men. And she says, they're dumber than men. And you know, and so he stands out there and pulls out his knife. And it almost felt like another Monty Python reference with the horse just coming and coming.
Yeah.
And coming, and coming. You know, like recutting the same shot of it approaching. And then he goes full Daryl Dixon, just knife, you know, right into the skull of the horse. Horse falls, wipes out, guy gets to his feet. Naharis just takes it, you know, takes him down with his sword. And that's it. Just like very little extra emotion at all.
Right.
And I think that what this demonstrated was like being a champion on a horse with a with a lance and maybe a banner and all kinds of other stuff is this burden of culture and society that a king, a wise king, kind of brings to the world. It's like, I make you do all this stuff so that we don't have constant badass fights all the time.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a weight to everything we do. There's a tradition to everything we do. And
it helps with, you know, kind of control the anarchy. If you think you can fight right. anytime you want, you know, then you will.
Right. But who will win is ultimately the one who's ruthless enough to exploit the vulnerability.
Yeah.
The horse is big and stupid and slow. I can take out the horse and I'll take out the guy.
Right.
You know, and it, mostly they don't fight that way, but Dario will.
Yeah.
You know.
Chris, that was...
Man, you gotta... You gotta love the Han Solo, Indiana yeah. Jones.
Totally.
You
know, it was very Indiana Jones. It's like, hey, it's me.
Yeah. and then, you know, the super cocky, oh yeah, I can just take him down. I don't need nothing. Yeah, like, bing, bing, bing.
So after the takedown, Danny gives this big speech. And again, I guess we're just going with she has some sort of internal loudspeaker system. And catapults come out, and they shoot the chains into the city, and the slaves there put two and two together, and the masters are not liking it, and we cut the black.
Yeah.
And end of episode.
Yeah.
So we have a little more listener feedback at this point to kind of cleanse our palate from the long, long rape talk. We had a couple of other topics that actually some of our listeners brought forward a question. The first one was,
The first one's Katrina McDowell. Danny, breaker of chains. I think we're being set up in the beginning of the show with Tywin and Tommen's interaction by establishing what makes a truly great king ruler. We went down the list of failures, establishing a long chain of rulers with traits that were ultimately ill-served by holiness, justice, and strength. It was established that every great king needed wisdom above all other things. Tywin counseled his young grandson that a wise young king heeds the advice of his counselors, and the wisest of all kings continues to seek their advice for a long time after that. I couldn't help but wonder, what was the purpose of this long-winded, boring scene? Was, until we got to the end of the show. Besides having a great speech and throwing barrels of broken slave collars over the walls of Marine, something else was happening here. We are witnessing the growth and the emergence of a ruler who seems to possess all-important trait of wisdom. Can Danny not only break the chains of slaves, but break the long chain of misfortune rulers that has plagued Westeros for so many years?
Mm. Yep.
And then Ross Staffan.
Well, and can she teach everybody to speak Valyrian in a really cool way?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on.
High Valyrian.
Dude, I always made fun of the people who could speak Klingon, but I might actually bust out a little Valyrian here and there.
Make
it
like
a
high, make a hiney hay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, Jason. Ross Staffan. So who will be most hated character now? I'll go with either Cersei, Stannis, or Ramsay Snow.
And then we had a bunch of answers to that.
Yes. So then this was done in our group where we do a lot of chatting.
Yeah.
Joanne Silverman, Ramsay, scared just saying his name. Katrina McDowell. On the show, they have showed Littlefinger as being the puppeteer behind almost everything. They've shown him lying to everyone, including Kat, to get her to release Jaime Lannister. He framed Tyrion for the attempt on Bronn's life. He found out Roz was talking to Varys and sent her to Joffrey to be his plaything and target for archery practice. Yeah, the dude is pure evil. Stephanie Brown Anderson. I had how smug Melisandre is. She's not on the list, but damn it, Stephanie's going to put her there. I agree, and I'm behind her on this.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's a religious fanatic that burns people alive. I'm not keen on religious fanaticism.
good answer.
I think we have a lot of agreement at this table.
I think we voted Melisandre so far.
I don't know. I voted Shay, and everybody was like, why are you voting Shay? And I'm like, isn't it obvious? I mean, come on. Shay?
Yeah, she's been doing a lot of raping and cannibalism and stabbing women in the tummies with the knives. She's been incest, my God. She's been busy.
Hey, and nothing will cut you like a bad accent. I mean,
well, remember that when you start working on your little accent game.
Oh.
Baelish has a bad accent too, and he's done a lot of sleazy stuff.
Yeah.
Chase has a bad accent, has done mostly noble stuff.
All right. Littlefinger
works. It's like a lifetime pass. Right.
And now we have Nicole Hively. I think people don't hate Cersei because she's a bitch. But she's trying to protect and provide for her children. Ramsay Snow Bolton is just psycho. And Reek Theon should have killed him. I think Stannis has veered so much from the pious man he was, he's misguided, even though he should have succeeded his brother.
So that's the list of potential people for you to hate that we're going to have going into it.
It's a long list.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's all I've got. Anything else from anybody else? Closing comments? We're going to have a spoiler section, so listen to the music.
I'm going to need to, when I'm in the mood for some violence this week, I'm going to need to see some badass Vikings.
Vikings, yeah. we'll get some of the Vikings.
Thank you.
And the next 2 weeks are directed by Michelle MacLaren.
We are settling in for some proper TV directing.
Proper television. She's not going to accidentally call something not rape.
She probably won't do that.
She probably won't do that.
No. So. If she's going to have somebody raped, she's going to tell you.
Exactly. We're going to see some blood on the shaft.
There's going to be blood. So, okay, well, if we have nothing else, then until next week, you are a hateful woman. Okay, so we just have a little short spoilers discussion, unless anybody has anything epic to bring. So it looks like the next two episodes are Michelle MacLaren. Michelle MacLaren is all about the action. And we know that what's coming is Oberyn versus the Mountain.
But that won't be the next two episodes.
You don't think so?
No, I think she... that's definitely episode 8. So there is a list of episode titles out there, and episode 8 is entitled... The Viper in the Mountain, or something, The Mountain and the Viper. Now, I think she's also directing that episode, right?
Episode 8? No, I don't think so.
No,
that's going to be the Graves.
Did he get episode 8? I thought he got, like, or episode 10. Yeah.
So it's not...
He gets 8.
Oh, okay.
It's mostly... I mean, Graves is, like, the core director.
Right.
So she's not... So we're going to be... I mean, if we're not going to get to Oberyn and the Mountain for 4 more episodes... There's not a whole lot of Tyrion action.
Well, I think we get the beginning of his trial, which is where that fun little video of him dancing down the aisles came down.
So we might get that. So this is episode 3 that we're on, right? So we might get that episode 5. Don't know.
And the next episode is called Oathkeeper. I'm looking up the name of the episode. It's taking me a couple of seconds. But the next episode is Oathkeeper.
Uh-huh.
Which obviously means that we're going to get some, probably Jaime handing over the story to Brienne, and probably Brienne and Pod leaving King's Landing.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to get that. Episode 5 is called The First of His Name.
Right.
So we're likely to get Tommen.
Being
crowned and all that. But I think, they've talked about, in one of these there will be an action sequence because Jon is going to hit the mutineers at Craster's Keep.
So that's what the thing is, you're bringing Michelle Caron in for some action.
Right.
Yeah. So and she's not going to get the Mountain and Oberyn, and she's going to get
John. I think they're going to get that. There's very possibly going to be the invasion of Meereen in one of those scenes. I don't know if that's going to be one of these two. But, you know, we know 8 is going to be the Viper versus the Mountain.
Right.
9 is going to be almost all, if not all, the battle at Castle Black.
Right.
And 10 will be just an amazing amount of awesomeness that I don't know how they get into one episode. Because there's so much shit going down.
If they follow the pattern of the previous seasons, 10 will actually be a place setter for next season.
But right? I don't think they're going to. I mean, 10 is where Tywin's going to get it.
Right.
10 is where Tyrion escapes, kills Tywin. 10 is where... I mean, it's possible they could do it earlier, but 10 is very possibly where Lysa gets thrown out the moon door.
So I read that eight is where Tywin gets it.
No way.
That's what I read. They've shuffled some things around so that he gets it a little earlier, and we get a little fallout after that.
All I know is that Graves has talked about episode 10 being the most full and most difficult, jam-packed, the most amazing episode he's ever done, and I find it hard to believe if it's all table setting.
Well, I mean, I'm just going by the pattern that they follow.
Yeah.
So I didn't. Because I didn't really dug into all this stuff. I had no idea they're going to be pushing this. So they're really going to make the trial of Tyrion the central story of King's Landing for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think they're going to end episode eight with the Viper dying.
Right.
Which means there isn't time.
Like, to have Tyrion also escape,
you have
and
to have
kill Tywin and get
with
away.
Jaime. You have to have a conversation with Varys and then Jaime. Yeah. And then you have to have all the escape. Like, that's the end of whatever episode it is. Except
right.
Or maybe it's not. There's a lot of rumors that they're going to have Brienne meet Lady Stoneheart at the end of episode 10. And then where's Dany's storyline climaxing? Like, there's just a lot of stuff that needs to go down.
There's the list.
Yeah, cool. Well, I don't have much about that for spoilers. I just wanted to go over like what we expect to show up. Who are you worried about dying? Jane?
I was like, man, the Viper dies. Damn.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude.
Oh yeah.
Nah. I just sitting here processing that.
It's
hadn't heard that one yet.
But he's gonna be with us for the whole season. I thought he was gonna die.
Yeah. Well,
it's pretty epic too.
Yeah, it's very epic death.
I'm sorry. I feel bad.
No, honestly, it doesn't bother me in the slightest. Yeah. That's why I stay on for this.
Yeah,
except for you're like, oh man.
Yeah, but he's going to be oh man when he actually sees it. It's not a question of when.
Yeah, it's not being spoiled. It's just Oberyn's really cool. And he's not going to be with us.
Yeah, he's a good character.
Yeah, he's just
So, and then it looks like we're cramming most of the little fights of the Wildings versus the... Into one big epic.
In the book, it's really actually three battles.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it's going to be one big
fight,
episode.
Yeah.
They've kind of implied that it'll be very Blackwater-esque, that it might be the entire hour.
And it might be like in three stages or something like that. Three battles,
right?
One
the
episode.
Wildlings attack from the south, and then they attack from the
north.
Yeah, or
three parallel fights.
We get to see
whatever.
The biggest fart the North has ever seen.
The biggest fart the North has ever seen.
Which I think is hard to portray on film.
It's hard to count. You really get the epic sense of it.
They should have gotten Michelle McLaren for just the like blast
wave. Well, no, the way Martin writes, you know what's in that fart. He'll describe all of the foods. It was 70 bites of food.
Vance Rader eats and ate.
Is it? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so catch us next week. And until then, happy watching.